Hello, and welcome to Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Rita Dunaway, here in the studio with my co-host Dean Welty, and today we're going to talk about an important case that is currently pending before the United States Supreme Court. At the heart of this case is a simple question. Should the government be permitted to force private organizations to advertise for services that the organizations exist to oppose? Most of us would laugh at the very question. We live in a land of liberty where the First Amendment protects our freedom to speak only those messages that we choose to speak, right? Well, yes, but this right is under attack today.
Well, Rita, I'm anxious to hear about that attack on this right. And, you know, that would be bad enough. That is being forced to promote something that we oppose, whatever the particulars of the case.
Mm-hmm.
But the case that I think you're going to be talking about today is particularly troubling because it involves the state forcing, as you said, forcing private organizations that exist to promote the sacred cause of life and forcing them to also advertise for state-funded abortion. This is unconscionable. So just tell us about the details of this case.
Yeah, well, the case is called National Institute of Family and Life Advocates versus Becerra. And it centers around a 2015 California law, which is referred to as the Reproductive Freedom, Accountability, Comprehensive Care, and Transparency Act. And, you know, I just love the fact that abortion activists refer to this law as the Reproductive Fact Act.
How can we oppose that? It's a beautiful thing.
It's really silly. Well, the goal of this law, Dean, is to ensure that every woman who enters a pregnancy center to receive resources and counseling gets reminded that the state will gladly pay for her unborn baby to simply be killed.
That is incredible. Now, I can understand California is way off the track on so many issues. Mm-hmm. That's California.
Yeah.
But I think we need to remember that there are these pregnancy centers all over the country.
That's right.
Including many in Virginia, including one right here in Harrisonburg mm-hmm. that we refer to as AvaCare, used to be the Harrisonburg Pregnancy Center. These are all nonprofit organizations. Many of them staffed by volunteers, but they're formed by private individuals who have a heart for men and women facing unplanned pregnancies and who want to provide them with free pregnancy testing, counseling, in some cases, in many cases, ultrasounds, and also other tangible resources like baby clothes for mothers who need assistance. These pregnancy centers exist to promote the cause of life and to encourage these men and women to give their babies the gift of life and also to explore the option of adoption if they are unable to care for the baby themselves. What a noble, noble mission.
I just have to piggyback on that, Dean, and just applaud all those organizations out there like our own AvaCare here in Harrisonburg. They are really the ones on the front lines, as I see it, in the battle to promote life to those people who are facing a situation where it's very tempting to try to find some way out of a difficult situation. And having attended some of the banquets put on by AvaCare and back when it was the Harrisonburg Pregnancy Center, I have heard story after story, as I know you have, of these women who were just in terribly difficult situations, but they found someone to listen to them and someone to care for them and just help them think through the various options because of the existence of this type of organization. And I just applaud these centers for the work that they're doing. It's so important.
Rita, this is so upside down in reasoning, it's difficult for me to wrap my head around it. You would think that a state would provide assistance to promote life.
Right.
Assistance to these pregnancy centers mm-hmm. to care for the mothers
yes.
so that they can bring this baby into the world. Instead, they're trying to discourage them, talking about California again.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to discourage these efforts and actually saying, here, send us your babies so we can help you destroy them.
Right.
That is turning reason upside down.
And it's turning the purpose of government upside down. Protecting life is at the very core of the whole purpose of government, as we learn in the Declaration of Independence.
We are endowed by our Creator for the whole purpose of protecting life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Well, Dean, apparently the state of California is just very troubled by the existence of these centers where people, as you mentioned many times, volunteers provide pregnant women with life-affirming options as well as the tangible resources to support them in their choice. What is apparently most important to the state of California is that anyone who enters these pregnancy centers be reminded that the state and these organizations like Planned Parenthood are waiting in the wings to provide a free abortion.
That just blew me away. I did not know that any state would provide free abortions, and it blows me away. But even so, even given that fact, how is the state able to force pregnancy centers to help promote abortions? How can they do that?
Well, the California state legislature did what any tyrannical government would do. It passed a law requiring that any privately operated pregnancy center that provides pregnancy tests and ultrasounds, which, as you know, many of these centers do, have to inform their patients that free or low-cost abortions are available. The law further requires the centers to provide the phone number of the state agency that can refer them to these abortion providers.
Rita, I checked that law mm-hmm. last night. It was signed and approved by the governor on October 9, 2015.
Uh-huh.
That's almost 3 years ago. Have the pregnancy centers been complying with this law? Do we know?
I don't know. I would guess that they have not, since they challenged it in court.
Oh, okay. So it would have been held until a decision by the court, because there's a civil penalty for not
right.
complying.
Oh, yes. And it is a stiff penalty.
Yes.
It would put them out of business.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's $500 for the first offense, and then it increases for repeat offenses
yeah.
if they don't come into compliance.
Yes.
Well, Rita, this may come as a surprise to you. I'm not a lawyer. But this, what you just described, doesn't sound like free speech to me.
Yeah, of course not. This is precisely what is known in First Amendment law as compelled speech. It is the blunt force of the law applied to coerce private citizens or groups to say exactly what the government wants them to say. And it is antithetical to free speech, and it's a brazen affront to liberty. Dean, you might remember the case of, I think it's West Virginia versus Barnett, where the court ruled that students in public school cannot even be compelled to rise and recite the Pledge of Allegiance because that is considered a form of compelled speech. And the First Amendment protects people from being forced by the law to say something that they may not agree with. But here we have the state of California doing exactly that.
I know we're going to talk about some other parallels later in the program, but one comes immediately to mind. First of all, this was passed in the middle of the Obama years mm-hmm. of his presidency, so we shouldn't be surprised that there's going to be an effort to promote abortion. That was one of his major, major goals during his presidency. But it reminds me of something else that happened during the Obama years, which is to compel people to buy health insurance
yes.
or face a very stiff fine if they don't.
Yep.
And it came up in the court, I think. Well, can they compel you to buy broccoli, even if you don't like it? And so here we have examples of that compelled speech. Now, Rita, I understand that several of the affected pregnancy centers in California took this argument to court. You can't compel our speech. But that a federal district court and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, we can say something about the Ninth Circuit, I suppose, too, at some point.
Yeah, we'll try to resist the temptation.
Rejected their claims. However, I think another court maybe upheld these claims. The Fourth Circuit, we may have to check on that.
Yeah.
In Richmond, upheld the claims when a Baltimore tried to impose that compelled speech on pregnancy centers.
Yeah, that's
right. So there's a conflict here.
There is a conflict between circuits. Well, what the Ninth Circuit did is to rule that because this California law regulates this class of what's referred to as professional speech, it can be subjected to a lower level of legal scrutiny. The court went on to find that the law withstands that lower level of scrutiny for professional speech because it is based on the state's concern that some women who visit pregnancy centers may not be aware of the state-funded abortion option. And, Dean, you know, we could talk all day about all the other options the state has to advertise for its funding of abortion and provision of free abortions. If it wanted to, the state has many different opportunities to promote its own message. But the point is, what it has done is to force these pregnancy centers, private groups and organizations, to promote its message for it.
Rita, this is getting laughable.
Yeah.
I think Ford ought to be forced to promote Chevrolet. I mean, just
yep.
out of fairness.
Yeah.
Well, let's get serious now.
Okay.
When you mention this professional speech, mm-hmm. in this context, I assume you're talking about things like informed consent requirements for medical doctors, mm-hmm. which strikes me that there ought to be that kind of information forced on abortion clinics.
Yes.
To inform the women that there are very strong risks
yes.
to having an abortion.
Yes.
Especially for the baby.
And that there are other options.
That there are other options.
Mm-hmm.
It should run both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know now that medical professionals are legally required to inform their patients about risks and benefits of procedures before the patient can give consent to it. We talked about abortion clinics should do that. So do you think this could be a similar situation?
No, I don't, Dean. The Ninth Circuit was just wrong. A lower scrutiny professional speech standard has been recognized in the law, and it's appropriate when we're talking about healthcare professionals advising patients about specific risks that accompany specific medical procedures that they are about to perform. That's what informed consent is all about.
It's
about,
I say something about abortion clinics?
Yeah, exactly. That's why that situation is different.
Yes.
Because informed consent is about telling the patient the risks and alternatives to the procedure that the doctor is about to do on them. But here, we're talking about women who have not come to undergo a risk-laden medical procedure. We're talking about the government requiring private individuals to advise a woman that she could choose a risk-laden procedure to end the life of another human being. This is altogether different, and it is, frankly, outrageous.
Women go to pregnancy centers for, I think, two reasons. One, am I pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
Confirm my pregnancy. Secondly, what are my options?
Right.
What can I do?
Yes.
I hadn't planned on this. What can I do?
This is not an informed consent situation.
Well, Rita, I'm getting over the laughing at the ludicrous intent of this, but it is actually frightening.
Yes.
It's one thing for the state to pass laws that prohibit someone from doing something that's harmful, or at least to advise them about the risks, as in the case of abortion. But it's quite another, as you've pointed out, to force someone to do something or promote something that not only violates their conscience, and which in the case of abortions can also be harmful to the mother and certainly fatal to the baby.
Yeah.
That's where we need informed consent.
Right. And Dean, I think we really need to consider the kind of precedent this law sets if it is allowed to stand. I pray that it will not stand. But this kind of law would suggest that the state could, for instance, require marriage counselors to tell couples where they can go to get a low-cost, quick, and easy divorce. It would suggest that the state could force addiction recovery groups to notify attendees that recreational marijuana is legal, or to require oncologists to inform every terminally ill patient when the doctor delivers that diagnosis that, hey, physician-assisted suicide is available. It's just bad public policy.
We can think of all kinds of examples. I thought of another one that is happening right here in Virginia and many schools across the country, where schools can require students to attend FLE classes that promote sexual behaviors which the parents oppose. And I think we're going to be talking about this next week. Again, something that's happening in California in that context.
Yes. Well, Ann O'Connor, Dean of the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates, the group that is involved in the Supreme Court case, said that these state-mandated signs, the signs that the law is requiring these pregnancy centers to post, and I'm quoting her here, push out the message that the pregnancy center wants to get out there. They push that message out and instead replaces it with the language the pro-abortion industry wants us to put in there. And her quote continues, "The government should be protecting the speech of pregnancy centers, not compelling us to say a message that totally contradicts our whole reason for being." End quote. That seems pretty reasonable to me.
You mentioned these state-mandated signs, and it gets laughable again. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to do it in all current major languages designated by the state, up to 13 different languages to promote
it's
this message.
Crazy.
Well, I assume that the California law was the result of intensive lobbying by pro-abortion groups like Planned Parenthood and NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action Lead. Would I be correct?
Absolutely. These pregnancy centers, Dean, see the law as the means the pro-abortion lobby is using to crush their competition in the state. Competition. That's how they see these pro-life organizations.
With the help of the strong arm of the state of California. Well, I understand that abortion providers may be intimidated by the strength of pregnancy centers, even in California. And it's amazing. According to a report by Alliance Defending Freedom, which, by the way, is the organization defending these pregnancy centers, today there are 174, and I've even seen up to 200 pro-life centers in California. 174. And 95 of them are medical clinics, providing everything from pregnancy testing, ultrasounds, STD testing, extensive prenatal care, and mammograms.
Wow, that's great.
Well, you compare Planned Parenthood, on the other hand, they only have 107 offices in California, and many of them offer fewer services than these pregnancy centers.
Well, it may be understandable that the abortion lobby would like to co-opt these pregnancy centers to promote their own message of abortion, but it just cannot be permitted in a nation founded on the principle of individual liberty. The government simply cannot commandeer private citizens and organizations to advertise for the abortion industry or anything else. And we really can draw a parallel to some of the other situations you're talking about, like the Affordable Care Act. It's just an affront to the whole principle of individual liberty for the government to strong arm individual citizens to doing something that they don't want to do, that's repulsive to them, and that the government has no jurisdiction to force them to do.
Rita, I think we have to remember this is California.
Okay, I'll try.
Well, and I say that because California was the state that challenged the Defense of Marriage Act.
Yeah.
Even after it had been approved by the citizenry of California, they brought it to court. And again, this Ninth Circuit Court said that it is unconstitutional to place a prohibition on same-sex marriages. This is California. And so we have to keep that in mind, unfortunately. But also, we just have to remember that this poses a real issue of conscience for those who administer and who work at these pregnancy centers. They want no part of suggesting that a pregnant woman should abort her unborn child.
One of the things that makes this case so appalling is the fact that California lawmakers actually carved out exceptions within the law to make sure that it would only apply to centers that express the pro-life view. The law singles them out and forces them to speak the very message they oppose, the pro-abortion message. This necessarily infringes upon their ability to express their own message, which is that every single human life is precious and full of God-given potential, regardless of the circumstances of conception. And Dean, I'll just add that for any attorney who has studied First Amendment law, you know, this is really what we refer to in the law as viewpoint-based discrimination. It's the singling out of one particular viewpoint on an issue, the pro-life viewpoint, for disfavored treatment by the government. And that is really just the most repulsive form of violation of the First Amendment that is known to the law.
Something else just occurred to me. California should compel Christian pastors to tell people where they can go for satanic worship.
That would be another parallel.
It seems to fit the mold
for
California.
Where will it stop if this is allowed to stand?
And we should point out that this issue does go beyond California. Hawaii and Illinois have passed similar laws. And Rita, what I wonder is, if laws like this are allowed to stand, what would be the implication in other areas? We've already mentioned some of them.
Well, that is exactly what people should be concerned about. As the Alliance Defending Freedom attorneys have pointed out, if the government can coerce pro-lifers to express a pro-abortion message, what would stop it from doing the same thing to other industries or even churches, as you mentioned, Dean?
Got ahead of myself on that one.
You are good. And this is a quote from Michael Ferris, who is my friend, my mentor, my former boss. And he's actually the one, Dean, who argued this case at the Supreme Court. He said, "If we lose, forcing pro-life centers to advertise for abortionists is only the beginning."
Well, Rita, we've already touched on this, but I need to drill down on that. What does Ferris mean by that? It's only the beginning? And where does the case stand now, Rita?
Well, I think it just means that state governments, you know, not only California, but other states, you mentioned Hawaii and Illinois, are going to be emboldened to pass laws like this that just get in the business of using the government to force individuals, private groups, private businesses to do things, to express messages that they don't want to do and that the government doesn't have any business telling them to do. That's the big concern here. Michael Ferris, as I mentioned, argued this case before the Supreme Court on March 20th, and we're hoping to see a decision in the next couple of months. And Dean, I can tell you that both Mike Ferris and others who attended or listened to oral arguments in this case were very positive about getting a good outcome from the Supreme Court, just based on the kinds of questions that were asked and the responses of the Supreme Court justices. And I'll give a little plug here for next week's program. I am going to be attending a continuing legal education conference that is sponsored by this National Institute of Family and Life Advocates. And for our next program, I'm hoping to come back and give a report and maybe sort of an update.
Stay tuned based on, next weekend.
That's right.
Stay tuned. I think for our listeners, it might be useful to remind us that this sounds very similar to a number of other cases that we've already mentioned on this program, where individuals and faith-based groups are forced to participate in activities that violate their consciences. Something similar, for example, is the Catholic adoption agencies in Massachusetts were required to put children into homes that they considered unsuitable for adoptions. They were forced to close their doors because the state was compelling to do something against their beliefs.
Well, good for them in sticking to their guns, but what a loss for the kids that were served by those adoption agencies. What a loss.
Well, and then we have others. And just to repeat, I expect our listeners may be familiar with them. We have the case of florists like Baron L. Stutzman in Washington, bakers like Aaron and Melissa Klein in Oregon and Jack Phillips in Colorado, even clerks of the court like Kim Davis in Kentucky, who were forced to provide services, in this case, for same-sex wedding ceremonies that violate their religious beliefs. It just goes on and on. This is the ripple effect that I think Mike Ferris is talking about. If the Supreme Court rules badly on this, and it's not beyond their ability to do so, we have the case of Roe v. Wade, and we have the same-sex marriage case. We've lost a little bit of confidence in the Supreme Court's wisdom, but we need their help on this case, or we're going to get in even worse trouble in many other areas. Rita, I do have a question about this. How is this case about the pregnancy centers any different from these cases we've already mentioned? What should we do if we're faced with this kind of situation? And how do you think the court will come down on this?
If there's a difference between this case and some of the others we've mentioned, I would say it's that this is really a pure speech case. In most of the other cases you mentioned, we're talking about business transactions. We're talking about the marketplace and non-discrimination laws and how they apply or shouldn't apply in certain artistic contexts. So there's a little bit of difference with this because it's just about speech.
Yes.
It's telling these organizations, you have to post these posters that send these women to the very place where you're trying to provide better alternatives to them so that they don't have to go there, so that they don't have to choose that hopeless and tragic option in their situation. As far as what we should do if we're faced with this kind of situation, with a situation like any of these cases that you've mentioned, I'd say you need to call Alliance Defending Freedom. They are a first-class legal organization. I am actually an allied attorney with Alliance Defending Freedom, and they provide free legal representation to people who are facing this kind of violation of their individual liberties.
Well, and I should mention that you've had experience in testifying before the Supreme Court of Ohio on behalf of a teacher who was under attack for exercising his freedom of speech. Rita, it is frightening. It's laughable in a sense because it's so absurd, but it's frightening because what happens to our pride in being land of the free and home of the brave? The freedom is under attack. Well, Rita, in case our listeners have any question about where you stand on this, I have to read from something that you wrote in the Daily News Record.
Okay.
Here it is. Rita writes, "Listen up, California. Here in America, the First Amendment protects the private voices of citizens from being hijacked to peddle your message or to dilute their own. Go to the marketplace of ideas to make your shameful claims. Listen up, California." I love it. All right. Well, that brings us to a close. And I want to thank all of you for joining us. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We do want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway. If you want to keep your chimney clean and safe and your teeth healthy and strong, please give them a call. We also want to thank so many of you for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881 Harrisonburg 22803. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
Let us rejoice. Let us rejoice.